Hi, I'm Femi OK. Today on the stream, we check in on Afghans who fled Afghanistan back in August when Western forces left and the Taliban took over. How are they doing? This is Nahid Samidi Bahram. She gave testimony to Congress just last month. It was an emotional experience. Have a look, have a listen.
Knowing people do not have a simple food to eat, having a simple dinner on my dining table has been very difficult.
I'm sorry.
When people do not have access into their bank account, and I being able to get my paycheck has been very difficult. So I think it's a time for us to understand the importance of humanitarian aids for Afghanistan and knowing that we should not let the people suffer anymore.
Joining us today, we have Arash, Hamid and Nila. They're going to explain why they are so relevant to today's conversation. Arash, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, everyone. My name is Arash Azizadeh. I'm an Afghan-American community organizer and based in Los Angeles, California. And I would say, you know, I'm a product of displacement. My parents were evacuated, much like the other guests were, except they were evacuated and became Afghan refugees back in the 1980s.
So good to have you. Hamid, tell our international audience who you are, what you do, and what you're bringing to the show today.
Thank you, Femi, for having me on the show. My name is Hamid Ahmadi. I'm a blogger and freelance journalist. I got evacuated on August 23rd, and I arrived in the U.S. On August 27th as part of the American airlift mission. And so I was in the camp for 45 days and at Fort Bliss, and it's been 20 days that I'm out of the camp, and I'm currently based at Silver Spring, Maryland.
All right.
So thank you.
Welcome to the stream. We're going to hear more about your experiences over the last couple of weeks very soon. Nilab, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. My name is Nilab Sadat, and I was evacuated in August. I arrived here in the United States on the 27th of August, and I'm based in Fairfax, Virginia right now.
Thank you, Nilab. All right, so if you're watching right now and you're on YouTube, what would you like to either ask or share with the Afghans who are on our show today? They have resettled in the US. What would you like to ask them? The comments section is here. I will do my best to put your comments into today's show. Hamid, if you were going to be truly, truly honest, very candid, how is resettlement going for you?
Well, I mean, it's definitely better after a very long time of staying in the camps, around 45 days. I mean, finally, I started to feel relieved a little bit, knowing that I'm getting resettled in one of the American cities. So that was a big relief, actually. But the thing is, the resettlement has its own challenges. It's not easy. We need to go through a very long and sometimes slow-going process of resettlement. There are some problems because I think it's the nature of any kind of resettlement in any part of the world, because it's not easy to feel like home where you go to a foreign country to get resettled. I think a part of the problem is natural. We need to go through this experience, but also I think due to a large number of Afghans got evacuated recently and the low number of agency, I kind of feel that there are some problems. I think there are some problems in terms of housing. I can see I'm in touch with other Afghans who got out of the camp recently. They also have some issues with the housing and other issues. So I think like in my case, I still don't have my own apartment yet, because you need to face some problems if you don't have credit history with the renting and leasing and stuff. So you kind of face these kind of, because housing is the one of the most important, one of the, I would say it is the first thing that we need to get in order to get resettled. Mm. So there are some problems in terms of housing. There are some problems in terms of we don't know yet when we're going to get our social security number. We don't know yet when we're going to get our work permit. So these are some issues that I think we all Afghans share as Afghans who got out of the camp recently.
Arash, these are all everyday entry points for life in America. But when you start to break it down, what you can't do if you don't have the information or the documents, can you explain that for our international audience?
Well, I think, you know, these are obviously challenges that anybody faces, regardless of whether they're refugees. If you're a marginalized person in the United States, mm-hmm. these are things you deal with. But also if you're somebody who's attempting to find a living wage or an affordable housing somewhere in the United States, that's going to be an issue. You know, obviously these Afghan refugees have the obstacles that get in the way of them. In regards to having to be displaced, having to find human dignity and safety and refuge here in the United States. And then they come here where there was a level of unpreparedness. The evacuation that happened in August was ad hoc. It was not prepared. That's why the other guests on this show, so many other thousands of Afghans had to sit at military bases, have a very uncomfortable stay where they had to, wear the clothes that they fled with, where they did not have access. For example, one of the issues that we're dealing with is access to winter clothing, because they're essentially sleeping in ad hoc and tents across military bases in places like Wisconsin, where we understand it can get very cold in the wintertime. And so these are just some of the obstacles that these folks are facing. And that's just the short-term view. That's the issues we're dealing with in November and December of 2021. And then, some of the issues that we're trying to assist as a community organization, as community members, is getting folks resettled, making them a success story in the United States. But there are many obstacles. Many of them are governmental, because the United States government, on both a federal and a state level, has not stepped up enough to accommodate them.
I am going to show our audience on my laptop the states receiving Afghan refugees, some of the biggest states here. In California, over 5,000 Afghans in California right now. In Texas, over 4,000. In Florida, over 1,000. And look at the northern states. It's already getting a little chilly around the D.C. area, which is here, which is where Nilav is. But up in the northern states, if you fled from Afghanistan in August, can you imagine? What do you have? What do you have with you if you're up in these northern states here? I would love you, Nilav. You sent us some pictures of your journey from Afghanistan to the United States. I'm going to start with one at the airport. Will you talk us through what happened? Let's start with that first picture. What are we seeing here, Nilav?
Well, it was one of the traumatic experiences of my life when we arrived to this point and I took this picture. I was so exhausted and tired. This is my oldest daughter, Sana, and you can tell from her face how furious and how tired she looks, because we faced some really grim conditions since we decided to leave Afghanistan. While it was in transit, while it was on the way to the airport, on board, throughout the evacuation process, it was like really hard. Yeah. It was extremely hard. But I, as one of our France said it was an ad hoc response to the very particular emergency situation. But however,
Nila, what's happening in this picture here?
Well, this picture has a good story because that's my son, Omar. The other one is Malala,
yeah.
And my oldest one. Omar told me that, look at, mommy, you said that the U.S. soldiers are leaving and there will be a war in the country. Look, they're here all ready and they have all the ammunition and everything. So why they just don't go out of the airport? So... yeah, it was, for me, it was, no parents would like to, would like for their children to experience such a thing. But unfortunately, my children went through this experience and hopefully it will have some positive things for them in the coming future.
Two more shots I want to show. This is on a military aircraft. Tell me more about that part of the journey.
Yes, this was the aircraft that we came by. It was basically packed. It was a cargo airplane. So we were packed just as materials. And the good thing, when we just moved into the plane, the officers and the people there would say, move forward because... your sisters and brothers are waiting outside and we have to evacuate them as well. So that sentence would give us more strength and we would just even shrink ourselves and make more places. We knew what's happening outside and we had to deal with it and we had to accommodate.
I want to bring in a new voice into our conversation. This is Jennifer's voice. Jennifer is basically calling out the United States for not being prepared, not being ready to help the Afghans that had to flee their country. This is what she told us earlier. Hamid, I would love you to comment off the back of Jennifer's video.
Although the United States has long been preparing to withdraw from Afghanistan, the United States was not prepared at all to deal with the massive influx of Afghans that were going to come as part of the resettlement process. It's very difficult for Afghans still to apply for asylum. It's very expensive for them to do so. They have to go to third countries. People are stuck in a bureaucratic mess. It is so hard, and this is so unnecessary. And President Biden can undo so many of these regulations with the signature of his pen, and he chooses not to do so, and we don't understand why.
I mean, when you arrived at your camp, they were still building it.
I think that was really true because the influx of Afghans who got evacuated from Afghanistan was immense. And that's obvious that the American government was not really prepared for such amount of Afghan refugees pouring into the U.S. and other, processing centers in Middle East and Europe. I think the influx of Afghans actually outpaced the screening process and other process, and because every Afghans they need to go through a different layers of screening, vetting process, and medical checkup. So these are the process in terms of logistical problem. I think that was a big challenge for the American government.
Would you mind? Would you mind if I bring up one point that you shared online on Twitter that was a logistical issue, and you helped solve a problem for the camp? Let me just come here to my laptop. Not complaining. This is Hamid. But this is what I got last night for dinner, and the next meal is 12 hours later. Refugee life might be safe, but never easy and favourable. Fort Bliss, El Paso, Texas. And that was your dinner?
Yeah. So to give a little bit context, this exact meal as from the first few days that I just arrived at the camp and I was one of the first few, flights that I came into the camp. So the situation was not really good, and that's not me. That's not just me saying it. That's what the camp officials would also say, that we are not really prepared. I could see as we came at the camp, the tents were being made, the facilities are being improved. So all the things that we see when I came out of the camp, it was a totally different camp, you know, compared to when I entered the camp. So this is a very long process of installing the facilities and all the makeshift tents and on all the discipline and order, and everything was has a gradual improvement, which is good. We actually, the part of our contribution was the fact that a lot of Afghans, including our team, we actually formed a group of volunteers to kind of have a contribution, right, and support to the camp officials, because they needed feedback, mm-hmm, and how they can improve the condition in the camp and how they can connect to the Afghans and get those feedback.
Okay.
I think we served as a bridge between the Afghans and between the camp's official. And I think this mean of communication between Afghans and the camp officials, I think it helped a lot to bring some improvement in the condition of the camp.
All right, Arash, I'm going to move on to you. I'm going to share this video comment with you. It comes from Sharifa Abbasi. She is an immigration attorney, and she talks about the challenge of finding, status. What is your status? And the stress of not knowing what your status is as an Afghan refugee in the United States. Here she is.
Unless we have legislation passed that will grant the Afghans permanent residency status, the biggest legal challenge that the Afghans will face will be in the coming months, in the coming year, as they start to leave the U.S. government facilities. Because they are all on parole status, a temporary status, which grants them an authorized period of stay of only 2 years, they will need to seek alternative routes to a green card, either through the SIV program, through their family members, or in the alternative through asylum. The Afghans will also be subject to the same vetting rules, the same laws as everyone else here, either on some kind of temporary status or permanent residency.
Arash, I was just wondering, how many Afghans are in the United States who fled in the past few months? Do we know? Do we have an estimate?
I think the rough estimate that we've been hearing, whether that's through, you know, informal and formal conversations we're having with refugee resettlement organizations, as well as Department of Homeland Security, we're looking at roughly 100,000 folks who have entered the United States in some capacity. And Sharifa actually makes a really great point, and this is one of the advocacy points that we're focused on, especially in these weeks and the coming next week. We're spending some days virtually on Capitol Hill to advocate for Afghans who have entered the country through humanitarian parole, which is just a way to enter the country to seek asylum. Mm. It's not a pathway to legal status. It's not an ability to get a green card. It's not an ability to have a pathway towards eventual citizenship. And, Jennifer had made the point earlier, too, the Biden administration can do a lot administratively, but Congress has an obligation, a moral one and a political one as well, to pass legislation. It passed benefits for parolees who have entered the country up until 2022 anyway. What they can do is take this even further and create a pathway to legal status, to citizenship, to a green card holder for Afghan parolees who have entered the country, so that they can become part of the American fabric. They are here anyway, you know, whether they are sitting on military bases or whether they are in Virginia, in Silver Spring, Maryland, or somewhere here in California and somewhere in flyover America. Well, they'll be entering and be part of new communities. You know, this past weekend, I saw a video of three young Afghan children, all teens or younger, who obviously do not really have the ability to speak English, but they were trick-or-treating already.
Yes.
And so they're becoming part of America. You know, they're about to go through what I entered, which is this like complex dual identity. And there's that to be navigated as well. But why can't the elected policymakers in Congress, in the White House, make this so much easier by allowing them to become part of the American fabric?
All right, Arash, Nilab, Hamid, we have so many questions for you. This is going to be the speed round. Instant questions, instant answers. All right. This one is on Twitter. Nilab, you take this one. It's very simple. On Twitter, which is on my laptop here, adapt and integrate. Just that phrase, adapt and integrate. Can you relate to that, or do you want to give some pushback?
Yes, actually, it's two great words, adapt and integrate. That's what we are already doing. But I'm so fortunate because I and my family were able to come to the United States in 2017, and we got our special immigrant visa status in 2017, and that's how we got our green cards. So we were coming and going back and forth. So pretty much we adopted many things that we had to do, and my children the same way. And my children were very lucky and fortunate to go to an international school in Kabul where they got to learn the language, and now they're adapting pretty well. But I'm so worried for the kids and for the children who came from rural areas of Afghanistan. They might face a lot of challenges, and to go to adapt and to integrate in this new culture and new everything is completely new for them.
Yeah.
I think it's very important, the point to adapt to and integrate, but it's not a single event. You know, it's a very long process for, especially for those Afghans. I know that I don't know the exact statistics, but I would say I would claim that the majority of Afghans who fled Afghanistan who are now here are those Afghans who speak zero English. I mean, this is the first step to, you know, sort of adapt and integrate, and they really need to go through a layers of, you know, challenges first. They have language barriers. They would face cultural shock in American communities. And I think this is a very long-term process. It's not that Afghans wouldn't like to adapt and integrate, but I think we need to be patient, at least for a majority of Afghans to sort of, they need infrastructures, they need education. Mm-hmm. They need trainings. They need to have, you know, other services until they kind of feel themselves into the American communities and start to adapt and integrate. So for part of Afghans who already worked with the Americans, either American government or American NGOs, it could be much easier to adapt and integrate, but it still is a very long-term process.
Okay. I want to show something to you, guests and also audience. There was a poll that was done quite recently about American public opinion, what they felt about Afghans who had worked with the U.S. forces who are in the United States, and what they felt about Afghans who had not worked with the U.S. forces. And there was a very big difference there in public opinion and where the support lies. I'm sure that you will actually see that, Nilab and Hamid and Arash, in your work and in your daily life. Have a look here on my laptop. This is the International Rescue Committee, and they ask something that you actually ask every time we do a show like this. How can I welcome Afghans to my community? You can donate, you can volunteer, you can translate, you can house a refugee family, you can hire a refugee if you're a business owner. So many ways to help. Arash, Hamid, Nilab, thank you so much for being part of the stream today. Appreciate you. Thanks for watching. See you next time.